get it back.
Oh.
You are the...
All right.
That's like 6:29.
All right, we can start here and call the meeting to order. Are there citizen comments this evening? No. All right. I have no reports to any committee members.
I mentioned at the last meeting that I was considering two resolutions, and I'm going to continue to work on those. One of them has to do with a request for zip codes in the village and town of Summers. And so with that, court counsel is working on language with me for that one. And also we're working with the village on that one. And then I reached out to Supervisor Grady, and we're looking at co-sponsoring one on Sheridan Road. And again, I'll have any resolution be reviewed by the administration, including court counsel and the executive's office, any other pertinent department, including public works. But Supervisor Grady and I would sponsor that. And also working with the village, and they're going to provide some language that they would like to on that. I reported at the last meeting we're making progress, but I'd like to get them in before the end of the year is my goal.
Very good. Any other reports? The minutes are August 10th and 15th.
So moved.
Second.
Are there any additions, corrections, discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Item number 6, the second quarter COPPA report. Who's going to do that? All right.
We're going to tag team it tonight.
All right,
okay.
Good. So, hello, why don't you introduce?
I will. I'm happy to. Yeah, so good evening, everyone. Brock Portilla from CABA, and along with me here is the new CABA president, Nicole Riff. Nicole's been with us for just shy of 60 days now. So she kind of jumped at the opportunity. I think she's had the chance to meet a few of you at the bond rating presentation, but wanted to come along tonight and get to meet everyone and introduce herself. So I'll turn it over to Nicole to say a few words, and then we'll go back to the reports.
Thank you, Brock. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today. I'll make this very brief, but just wanted to come by and say hello and introduce myself and really just express my gratitude for this partnership with the county. One of the most appealing aspects of this job for me was understanding that relationship between the county and between CABA, because obviously we can't be successful without the support of government. So just wanted to come by here and say hello and introduce myself, let you know that I'm here to support you in any way that I can. I'm very grateful for the warm welcome that everybody's given me into the county executive and a lot of the supervisors that I've had the chance to meet. We do have an event coming up here relatively soon that I wanted to make sure you were aware of. We are organizing a tour of Uptown Lofts, which is in the Uptown neighborhood of downtown Kenosha, or the city of Kenosha. You should have gotten an invitation to that. If you haven't, let me know. That will be on October 4th. And then I also did want to mention and give you a thank you for the High Impact Fund. So, you know, as I was looking at this opportunity to come here and work for CABA, finding out that there was a deal closing fund that we had as a tool in our tool belt was something that was truly a very attractive aspect of this job. That's very uncommon, I would say, for a county government to have a tool like that. And I do believe that that is a game changer when it comes to attracting development and really closing deals. When I worked in Texas for Governor Abbott running his economic development team, I ran the deal closing fund there for the entirety of the time I worked for the governor. And we closed a lot of projects due to the fact that we had that tool. So knowing that I could come here to Kenosha County, we've got this great project pipeline, but we're competing with Racine, we're competing with Milwaukee, we're competing with Illinois and Indiana, and we can really close the deal with that tool, I think is extremely valuable. We've got a great pipeline right now, even just since I've been here, of projects we're working on, advanced manufacturers that are creating high-wage jobs, they have that ripple effect in the economy, and if we can say, hey, we really want you to be here, we're going to go that extra mile and support you in this way, the county government is supporting you in this way, that really means a lot. So again, you know, thank you for that, thank you for the partnership, and I'm really excited to work with all of you. Thanks.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Why don't we go around the room and just introduce ourselves so that you know who we are.
Thank you.
I'm Terry Rose.
David. We've met. I'm Dave Gertson, so nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Welcome.
And I'm Aaron Decker. We've met at the bonding tour.
I'm Ignacio Perez.
Anna Wilson.
I'm Daniela Banda.
Tim Stocker.
Bill Grady, First District.
Mary Fasci.
Mark Bunch.
And Betty Murray.
Thank you so much.
How you doing? Welcome.
Thank you, sir. I've been taking notes.
Yeah. Who's going to make the report?
Yeah, so thank you. I'll jump into the report here. Everyone has it in front of them. I'll point out just first and foremost, of course, they would, you know, all of the active loans in these portfolios are in good standing. Of course, if there were any sort of defaults or late payments, those would be outlined since there's not, obviously, everyone's in good standing. So just kind of going through, I'll go through fund by fund here in the EDA revolving loan fund. A couple points of note, there was a one loan payoff from ROA, that's the real estate holding company for Platinum Systems, the IT company here in town. They went through a refinancing, so that loan was paid off in full. There was a new loan disbursement in the second quarter of $800,000. That loan was made to LMI Packaging as part of their expansion project. They added on about 50,000 square feet, and we used the EDA fund to help fund some equipment expansion needs along with the real estate. There is a loan commitment outstanding of $200,000 in that fund, which is pledged to Rarick Pacific. Again, that was to help equipment as part of their building expansion as well. In the EDA CARES fund, it's kind of a similar story there. We did have one loan payoff in the quarter from Bonco Products, again, as part of a equipment refinancing that they went through. There was a new loan disbursement in that fund as well of $134,000. That, again, was to the LMI Packaging expansion project. And similar story, we have $800,000 in that fund pledged. That pledge is to Rarick Pacific to help fund that same equipment project that I referenced in the last fund. In the county revolving loan fund, no new activity in the quarter there, no loan payoffs or new loans. I might just remind this committee that, you know, you see the activity in the EDA and the EDA CARES. That's kind of strategic on our end because the EDA funds have more restrictions on them. So anytime that we can use the more restrictive money for an eligible project, that gives us additional flexibility for others. So you know, that's just kind of like an internal decision making process. But obviously, we want to use the more restrictive money first. You know, first and foremost, and keep kind of the most flexible funds in our back pocket. And then lastly, you just have the high impact fund. No new loan activity there in the quarter. But of course, then on the next page, you have a list of all of the active businesses that have been high impact recipients. These are companies that would still be in the five-year performance window that we continue to monitor jobs and wages and that things before the loan would be forgiven or any type of repayment would be required. So with that, you know, Nicole kind of already talked about pipeline is still strong. We feel good about it. We have plenty of shovel-ready dirt. We have a lot of speculative building going up, so I think we're in great position to jump at new opportunities when they become available. So with that, I'll pause and answer any questions.
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned that ROA LLC is really Platinum Systems. That's the real estate holding company for them. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And they were able to secure financing which paid off the debt via CAVA, through CAVA, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So is that a relatively common thing where you see them do a refi to be able to pay it off and terminate the relationship with CAVA? Is that fairly common or is that not?
It depends. In this particular case, it was an ownership change, so there was kind of an event that triggered the payoff. Common, no. Does it happen? Yes. And I would just say, like, on our end, we're not opposed to payoffs because
sure, the money bank can come loan it out again, right?
If they can go get conventional financing, right. Sure. Job well done, and we get the dry powder back to go get another project.
Okay, so then the follow-up question is, when we take a look at this list of EDA/CLF, and on the following page, EDA Cares, is that right?
Yes.
Are they all written with a clause that the borrower has no prepayment penalty and they can indeed go after their own outside financing? Is that a standard type thing?
No prepayment penalties are the standard in CABA loans.
Good. And that's, you know, encouraging that they can have that option should the market favor them to borrow at a different rate, lower rate, whatever. So, that's my question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Further discussion? David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, to Brock. With what happens with interest rates and how are our loans being packaged relative to the current interest rate market?
Yeah. Another great question in terms of, like, how are they priced compared to market? Yeah. Yeah. So, depends on the project, depends on the risk associated with the project. I would say, generally speaking, CABA loans, and also depends on the contractual terms that we have within the individual funds. I would say that interest rates in any of the CABA loans probably vary between about plus or minus 200 basis points to market rate. We usually tie them to some sort of index at the time of the loan. So if it's, you know, prime plus 50, or you know, we just got some rates right now. Obviously, rates are spiking up. I think the SBA came out at somewhere around like 7% on 10-year money right now. So we try to we monitor that and try to and keep pace with that and stay competitive.
Would we be more apt to provide a forgivable loan or a lower than market rate in order to get a good deal for the business, in order to attract a business we really want?
We can package the high impact fund or a low interest loan together or separate at sub market rates to help incentivize the deal.
We can do that, right?
As long as it is in the terms of that contract. Yeah.
I remember in a market where interest rates are higher, because we have this powerful fund, you know, and I think we have more. We have, you know, relative to the size of our county, we have a more powerful fund than other counties of our size, if my memory's right. We can offer lower interest rate loans and for a whole bunch of other tools, and, you know, do more to get that business here if we want to. And so we have advantages over our competitors that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Then I'm trying to remember, my second question is, I remember we were working on different things with the regulators to try to get more flexibility in our funds, and I can't remember where we left off with that. Have we been able to do some things with some of these EDA funds? And I'm trying to remember where we left off with that.
Yeah, so the EDA, what I kind of call the EDA legacy, not the EDA cares, that is eligible for defederalization,
yeah.
And that will, I anticipate that happening prior to the year end.
Oh, all right.
The EDA CARES is new money that will remain a federal program and still be subject to single audit other federal requirements.
Yeah, I didn't remember it was imminent that the legacy EDA was on the brink of being defederalized. I didn't remember that. That's pretty cool. That'll help us a lot, won't it?
Absolutely. That's relatively new. The one that you might be thinking of Dave, is the CK, we used to call it the CKC fund, yeah. The Consolidated Kenosha County. That was the CDBG block grants.
Yeah.
Yeah, that we just finally finished all of the final reporting and everything earlier this year. But that was defederalized a couple years ago.
Okay.
But a long follow-up reporting period to finally close all of that out with the state of Wisconsin.
Very cool. So we're getting more flexibility in our funds. And could we take some of those old legacy dollars and lend them at a more favorable rate that we think we need in order to get a deal with the business?
There are still, even though they'll be defederalized, there are still certain restrictions that we will need to abide by.
So we
interest
can.
Rate being one of
yeah,
those.
Okay.
Yeah. So EDA calls for the lower of 4%. It's the
yeah.
the lowest is 4% or 75% of whatever prime is.
So we didn't get that much flexibility.
What it means is I don't have to submit
yeah,
semi-annual reports to the
EDA.
That.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Thank you. I yield.
Any other discussion? Brock, we have three students here who are part of the Youth in Government program. Perhaps you could explain kind of what CAVA is. I think this is their first meeting or first approach to this CAVA funds.
Sure, absolutely. So CAVA is the Kenosha Area Business Alliance. We're a 501c4 nonprofit organization. We serve as the economic development arm for all of Kenosha County. Primary goals of that are growth in tax base and job creation or retention. We do that through a number of ways. We have a business retention and expansion efforts. What we're talking about here today is we administer a revolving loan portfolio, which across the board, there's 8 or 9 different funds that make up about $35 million. We have various workforce initiatives to help our employers find the necessary labor force, skill training, etc., and then also work with the educational partners in town, mostly higher education, Gateway, Carthage, Parkside, Herzing, but also getting into the high schools as well, trying to sync up future employees with our employers, so that trying to make businesses position them for the most success they can have.
Any other questions or discussion? All right, thank you both for coming.
Okay.
Hope to see you again.
Thank you.
Chairman, thank you.
All right, we'll move on to the next agenda item, information systems, and who's going to discuss that?
That'll be me.
All right.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Tager.
Ben Tager.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, interim CIO. So thanks for letting me sit at the long table here. This is my first one, so if I do anything wrong or, you know, I'm doing something out of order, please let me know. but yeah, so there should be a memo attached to the packet you guys have, and it's also up on screen. But what I'm here to discuss is repurposing some capital funds from 2023. During the course of this year, there was GASB 96, which basically stated that we were no longer allowed to utilize capital funds for subscription-based services. And those services that are in this memo represent two different Microsoft services, our Office and our Dynamics 365, as well as Ceridian Dayforce. So those subscription-based service amounts will now be paid out of our operational. So what I propose that we do is take $600,000 of those capital funds and repurpose those towards a server upgrade. Our current set of servers were implemented in 2017, and we typically utilize about a 6-year time frame of replacement. So originally we were going to, in the 2024 capital request to replace our servers. By having these funds no longer being associated to subscription fees, I would like to hopefully move those towards paying for those servers. Sorry, I'm stumbling a little bit. I got lost.
No words.
But yeah, I just want to, so we were originally going to utilize or make that request for 2024, but being able to move that up allows us to not have as large of an ask for 2024. And then we're also able to maintain our proper life cycle for security-based purposes on servers.
Dave? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this seemed like a good idea to me. I couldn't remember that when we had the meeting with the county executive, was this in there as a bonded item for 2024?
And the CIP reports we got? Does not have the typical $1.9 million, it has $1.4 million in the CIP that was presented at the meeting on the 31st of August.
This was not in there. So we were expecting, we were anticipating approval
correct.
In order to do that. And this just requires committee approval, right? And
correct.
So it seems like a good idea to, you know, these dollars are already borrowed for this year.
Correct.
And we've got a decent rate on it. We cannot use the dollars to fund these operating items.
Correct.
So we had to take money out of the general fund. We already made those adjustments. So with that, I would move approval.
There, a second?
Second.
Second discussion.
Bill?
So this is a twofer then, isn't it? We're talking about actually using subscription-based services and a method of funding them. That's one part. Second part is replacing servers, correct?
Correct.
So currently, the servers that date to 2017, what number of servers are we talking about? How many in total are there?
12 nodes.
How many?
12 nodes.
12 nodes. And to what extent or capacity are they currently being utilized? Let me rephrase that. What proportion of the total number of them is active, and is there, should we say, spares or additional capacity within those 12?
I don't know the exact numbers, but I do know that from when we originally implemented it in 2017, we have progressively, with applications we've been able to utilize, we've been able to move some of them over to cloud-based services. So in the current solution that we're currently quoting out for, we would be decreasing our footprint. I don't have exact numbers on that yet, but we have worked with a couple of vendors to start the process of figuring out what that would cost. And they've been looking at what we've been utilizing currently to give us appropriate pricing based on that smaller footprint.
So you're saying actually a decrease in nodes from 12 to something that's unknown because it's not necessarily done in-house as it used to be. It's going into the cloud.
Correct.
That's my question. Thank you.
All right. Any further discussion there?
If we're moving server information to the cloud, are we allowed to use bonding to pay for that service, or do we have to use?
Let's clarify. The servers he's talking about purchasing will be on-premise servers.
Right,
right,
right. But I'm saying moving forward, since we're using the cloud on some of our stuff, can we pay for that with bonding or general fund?
The things
levy dollars.
The things that we have moved to the cloud
mm-hmm.
are now subscription-based services, so we cannot use
them. Okay, that's
a big circle.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I was just double checking.
Contributing to this whole
right.
footprint, but
you're right.
Yep.
And I think that was it. Yes.
Anyone else? All right. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? This does not go to the board. This is
correct. Just the letter to finance.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Well done.
All right. There's a finance resolution, and that's going to be presented by John Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. This is a resolution to approve the transfer of a parcel of land that we took by tax deed in May of 2018 to the city. It's located at 2701 47th Avenue, and it is vacant land. It consists of 16.15 acres. Last assessed in 2018 at $5,200, partly zoned agricultural, about 11.6 acres of it, partly zoned residential, 4.5 acres of it. And a portion of the vacant land is wetlands. City Administrator John Morrissey wrote a letter to County Executive and Chairman Nudo asking for transfer of this parcel to the city, which plans to secure a developer to build single-family owner-occupied residences on the property. There are unpaid taxes that are in the amount of $8,705.28. Administrator Morrissey indicated that the city would pay that to the county. And there's a significant amount of special assessments that total hundreds of thousands of dollars. Those are for sewer and water connections and water mains and that type of work that was done on the property in the past. The city would have to recover any of that in its workings with the developer on the property. So the idea here is that the tax deed property would transfer to the city. The benefits I see with doing that, are that it will increase the stock of single-family owner-occupied homes in Kenosha. I think that's a need that we have. It pays off the taxes owed to Kenosha County, and it puts these parcels to lawful use and produces tax revenue. From the city's perspective, I think their collateral benefit is that they're going to settle with the developer for these unpaid special assessments.
Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Moyer, what's the north boundary of this parcel? What street is the north boundary?
Oh, boy.
27th.
What was it?
27th.
47th. It's 47th and 47th.
No, 47th Avenue and
27th is the north.
27th is the north?
Yes.
That answers my question. Thank you.
How big a piece of property is it?
How big is it? It's 16 point.
A little over 16.15 acres.
And who is the developer?
I don't know who the developer is. The city is saying they're going to work with a developer. They haven't named a developer that I'm aware of.
Could you find that out?
I don't even know if they picked a developer. The letter basically said that the city will pay the delinquent property taxes due and will work with a potential developer on the unpaid special assessments due to the city. So certainly we could.
You know?
They say they're talking to some developers.
Further discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To get these tax deeds on the tax rolls, get them off of our balance sheet, it always seems like a good thing to do. I think the chairman has had an opportunity to have it do a little work on that, so thank you for working on this and doing that. I know we don't want to hold these parcels. We want to get them back on the tax rolls, and to have a property like this to help enhance our the housing in our community when that's so sorely needed is also a plus. So I would move approval of this resolution.
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, that's it.
Thank you.
Next item is the presentation of the 2022 audit.
So I will introduce again. You saw these two ladies in April at closeout. We have Maureen Peterson, who is an employee of Andrew Nuremberg, who has worked on Kenosha County financial statements for some time, and Erica Blunker, who is the successor to Kathy Andrea, who retired in June. And they will present to you the financial audit. And I want to clarify, last year there was a request that the financial audit come forward even if the single audit was not ready. So I believe Supervisor Grady made that request. So the representatives from Andrew and Norndorf will present the financial audit that you have before you. The single audit is not quite completed. It should be completed by the end of next week. So I do not know what the desire of the committee is with the single audit. Do you want us to just forward that on? Do you want a presentation of the single audit independently in October? I would ask for some guidance on that.
That would have usually been done with this.
Correct.
You want that?
I'm okay with not having you come back again. And I think the administration could present anything material. Generally, it's perfunctory. If there's any significant finding or anything in the management report, are we getting the management report here today?
There is, yes, it should be.
So we'll get
back.
That.
Yes.
So that's important.
Yep.
So I'm only one member of the committee, but I'm okay from a process standpoint of just having the administration present it. Would that be the preference of the administration?
Yes.
I guess I'll, okay, good. I'm in harmony with the preference of the administration. I'm only one member of the committee.
Okay. Anyone else? Yes. No?
It'd be good to know if the committee was okay with that.
Right. Is that agreeable?
Yeah. It is.
All right, does anybody disagree? All right, so
okay.
Take care of that. All right, go ahead.
All right, again, my name is Maureen Peterson. I'm going to start off just kind of giving you an overview of the audit process. We work with CLA. We've been working with them for a number of years, so we have a good working relationship with them. We met all their deadlines that they required of us. So basically the audit process, we start gathering carryovers from the departments in March. Then we start preparing the closeout documents, which we presented to you in April. And then after we do that, we start working on all of the notes for the financial statements that we're going to give to the auditors and the trial balance. We give that to them when they come here in May for their field work. We work with the auditors through May to get the financial statements ready. Then by the beginning of June, we have a rough draft ready for them that we give to them, which is the notes and the financial statements. And then we work with them through June, and by the end of July, they have this book prepared for you guys. So Erica is going to talk a little more about the audit.
Sure. So yeah, to piggyback off of what Marina said, in addition to the audit book, Clifton does issue a summary governance letter, and the summary of that is that it's very standard communication, no significant findings, no difficulties in dealing with management, no other issues that needed to be brought to the attention of the Finance Committee or of the board. And the county really has a long history of that. Typically, we have very clean audits, no financial statement, internal control findings, and that was repeated again this year. So if we want to look into the audit book, the first thing I will point to is actually on page two, Okay. Page one is the audit opinion. Looking at that second paragraph on that page, that's the meat of it. It says that our financial statements are materially correct. They can be relied on by outside parties, by inside parties. There's no material misstatements in those financial statements. So that's the ideal report. The one thing that is different in this report this year, they did have an emphasis of matter paragraph related to last year's change in GASB standards, again, 87, related to leases. So that's a required modification to the report, but it is not, it's just a disclosure that things look different this year because of that standard. But otherwise, standard clean audit opinion, and they did sign and date that report on July 28th, as Maureen pointed out.
Okay, and then I'm gonna talk about the management discussion and analysis, which starts on page four. It gives just a real high level view of the county's activities and plans for the future. If you look on page 10, there's some really nice graphs. The governmental activities are on page 10,
And it shows, broken down by the different functions of the government activities, expenses and revenues, how they're tied together. And then the little graph below that, it shows you where the revenue sources come from for governmental activities. And as you can see on here, the majority or the largest portion comes from operating grants. And then next is property taxes, and then other taxes, and then there's all the other little items. The next page shows, it's the same two graphs. These are for our business type activities. And since these are business type activities, their largest source of income is charge for services, which you can see here was 73%. Their next source of income would be operating grants, and then the remainder comes from capital grants and property taxes. And then on the following page, page 12, there's this graph here, and I know Barna presents the general fund report to you guys, so you guys are kind of familiar with these items. This is just a graph representation of that. So you'll see starting in 2003, the percentage of the unassigned fund balance percentage of the expenditures was at 19.5%. It was below the 25% target. We're now up to 32.9%, which is above the 25% target, which we've been above that since 2015. So that's looking really good.
Before you press on, question on page 10.
Okay.
Expenses and revenues, governmental activities. And then you break it down, blue being your expenses and red the revenues.
Yeah.
So are you, explain, are you saying that we are, our revenues don't match our expenses?
No, this is just, it's just a showing you for, so for general government, the expenses were $32 million and the revenues were $13 million. And then, so it just shows, it's just showing you based on like, okay, public works, what's in public works, these are their expenses, and then the revenues.
So the orange is program revenues only. It does not include property taxes or sort of general types of revenues. So this is only the revenues that are tied specifically to that function. So we see, for example, social services is largely funded by its own grants. So it has a higher amount of program revenues that are covering its services, whereas like a public safety is primarily funded not by program revenues, but by tax dollars. So that's what the sort of difference in the revenue expenses is how much of that service gets funded by general tax revenues rather than specific sources. Yeah,
the other thing to point out too is these aren't departments. So public safety not only includes the sheriff's department, but it also includes district attorney's office. Mm-hmm. And there's no department education or recreation, obviously. So there's parks and other different things in there.
So just a point of information, if I understand this correctly, we're looking at this chart that's on the top of page 10. In layman's terminology, if you wanted to say that the blue line was the expenses, the orange are what we used to call pass-through dollars, meaning they come from state, they come from federal, they come from grants, whatever. And the, I guess I want to rephrase that, the blue would actually be levy dollars, is that correct?
No, the difference maybe between the blue and the orange would be levy dollars.
Okay.
So the blue is all the expenses.
Okay.
It's everything that it costs to run your general government functions. The orange would be not only grants, but any specific charges for services. So if they're charging fees at a counter for, it would say the clerk is charging fees for.
Good, I think that's a good point to make.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a statement later on that shows that in actual dollars, so I'll touch on that too, so it might be a little more clear in that.
Understood, format. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else on that line?
Go ahead.
All right. So that is actually a great segue. So we'll move on to the financial statements now. And those actually begin on page 22. When we made our presentation in April, I think we, as far as the closeout, we focused on the fund financial statements. Pages 22 and 23 are like the big picture government-wide financial statements. So 22 is your balance sheet or the statement of net position. So we have two columns for government activities and business type activities, and then your total. This is the only statement where you have sort of like full accrual business type presentation. You've got all your capital assets, all different types of accrued liabilities, deferred inflows and outflows. This is like the big picture. So we don't present this at the closeout meeting because we don't have all of the accruals and everything done at that point in time, but this includes everything. So if you look at the final column here, we've got the county has total assets at the end of 2022 of $482.7 million. Of that, the number above it, $287 million are capital assets, and the rest, about $195.8 million, is mostly current and other assets. Down below, for 2022, the county had $260 million in liabilities. That includes about $166.5 million in long-term debt. The rest is other types of short-term liabilities, pension and OPEB liabilities, things of that nature. So the net of that is just about $144 million of net position at the end of the year. And like I said, we've got governmental and business type activities columns. We'll talk about those on their individual statements in just a minute here. Page 23 is the statement I was referring to just a minute ago, where we sort of see in more detail the breakdown of the expenses and the revenues for the county. So your expenses is what you, that first column there is what you would have seen in the blue for the governmental activities. All the costs associated with those functions of government, including depreciation and any sort of accrued types of expenses. Following that, you have three columns, which are the program revenues. So those program revenues are what the orange represented in our table. And those are your directly offsetting revenues that are tied to those specific functions. So what you see is we start out with county expenses of $206.5 million. We've got $117.6 million of directly offsetting revenues, leaving us with just about $89 million of expense that aren't covered by direct revenues. Down below that in the final column are your general revenues, which are largely property taxes, general property taxes and debt service property taxes, as well as sales taxes, and then a few other unrestricted grants, investment income, and things that make up that difference. But ultimately, you'll see that there was a positive change in net position of just under $16.5 million for the year for 2022.
Aaron. So now that we see these numbers, this chart at the bottom, mm-hmm. the 4%, 40%, and 1%, that's what makes up the orange, correct? Which would be charges for service, operating grants and contributions,
correct.
And capital grants and contributions. That's what makes up the orange
yes,
bars.
That is correct.
And so the property taxes, other taxes, unrestricted grants, and other is where we make up everything else
correct.
To break even.
That's correct.
Okay.
Before we leave 23, just refresh my memory, where does shared revenue go, what we used to call shared revenue? Is that in the 4.7 million? I'm trying to remember.
I think state shared revenue is in that grants and contributions not restricted line in the general.
Yeah.
Which is the
4.7. 4.7.
Oh,
yeah.
It is there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right. That's thank you.
Okay. So moving on to page 24, the governmental funds balance sheet. This hasn't changed a whole lot since we presented it in April. A few changes. The unassigned general fund balance went down a little bit because there was $970,000 in the budget that was from 2022 reserves to be spent in 2023. So that amount moved up into the subsequent year expenditures. So That's really the only difference there. The other difference is we added a separate column for the ARPA fund because now it's considered a major fund. So you can see here there's still 10.7 million in cash, which needs to be used by 2024 or committed or used by 2024.
And then, do we have that committed?
We have
or how much
the majority of it. I believe there's $7 million in the 23 budget to be used.
Okay.
A portion of what is left there is what's still earmarked for Brookside, which is 1.275. And then I believe there's about $2 million that has not been allocated to anything that we're looking to potentially use in the 24 budget.
Okay, thank you.
And then on page 26 is the revenue and expenditures report for governmental funds. You can see here the general fund had a surplus of $2.7 million. Again, ARPA funds is now shown as a separate column, and we're showing the $7.6 million that was recognized because it was used in 2022. In the total government funds, you'll see that there was a surplus of $5 million. And then on the next page, on page 28, the budget, you'll see that the general fund budget, the expenditures were within budget.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Page 26, revenues, investment income under general. That's a negative number. Any thoughts on that?
That's because there was
unrealized
losses.
The
investment
so,
portfolio
oh, just
performed
due
very well
okay.
in 2022.
Like
all of us personally
took
a hit, so
yes, right.
Yeah. Takes a hit as well.
But they were unrealized, so
Because you didn't cash out.
We didn't cash out.
Right. Right.
Yep.
Like ours are unrealized also.
It's a paper loss, but right.
I didn't realize it.
I wish I didn't.
Yeah.
You realize it now. Thank you. That's my question.
Okay. If we move on to page 31, so Maureen just talked about those governmental activities. On page 31, we have the business-type activities, proprietary funds. Again, very much in line with what was presented during the closeout presentation here. Any changes were from final year-end sort of big item accruals related to pensions, OPEB, and the leasing standards, but ultimately not much impact there on the net position of these funds versus what we presented in April. So I'll go ahead and point to page 33 then, which is the statement of revenues and expenses and changes in net position for these funds. Each of these funds did have an increase in net position after transfers from 2021 to 2022. The Gulf Fund had an income of $443,000 just about before transfers, and then the transfers they did have in were bonding for capital projects, which I think it was 50% covered by bonding in 22, and then in 23 that's going to be 0%, so Gulf will cover its own capital outlay in 2023.
Hey, before we move off of the proprietary funds, I just want to, I think we should all understand what we moved in for Brookside. So if we could look at the transfer in that we had to do for Brookside and then get an understanding of how much cash really went in versus accounting. That should be on one of
33.
On 33, yeah, the total transfers in was $4.038 million.
But that wasn't all to cover the deficit. So how much of that was to cover the deficit?
That 4.038 represents the 3.5 of ARPA funds that was transferred in at the end of the year with closeout that the board approved. There was also bonded funds that were moved in for some smaller purchases. I believe that was
$300,000.
Was it? I didn't think it was that high. And I also believe there were some ARPA funds that were in Brookside's budget for the year. It was about $250,000.
Transfers are on page 69.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So we budgeted a quarter million of ARPA money plus moved in 3.5. So really without 3.75 million of ARPA money, that's what would that be what you could consider the true deficit to have been?
I believe the true deficit would have been the income or loss before transfer.
Well, I mean
1.67.
But, 0.67?
The 1.767.
That's the accounting 7.67. With depreciation. That's not right. An EBITDA type true. Number. It's a, if you're looking at the true cash deficit, that's 3.75 million. And
right.
This year we're tracking towards half a million to a million. Yeah. Right?
Yes.
And so we're within that 1.2 million that we had allocated. Yes. So we've really reduce the deficit dramatically.
Yes.
And actually, some of the changes that are made might even do better than what I said.
Yes. Yes, it is looking that way.
Yeah, the bonding for Brookside was $88,000.
$88,000?
Yes.
So just to follow up, not to digress too much, but to David's point, we're still in a deficit situation in Brookside.
Yes.
We're not losing as much as we had previously.
Right.
As memory serves, was that largely public COVID related and so forth? Was that the impetus for such a big loss back in those days?
For 2020 and into 21, it was due to COVID shutdowns, things like that.
Primarily, census. Not solely.
Then in 22, you may recall that Linda came and talked to the finance committee about staffing issues that they were having. So they had the referrals for census, but they didn't have workers to service, so okay. They couldn't take people in. So the board did a really nice job of approving some incentives before the classification and compensation study went into effect. Staffing is now very good, and census was at 125 as of yesterday,
right.
And has been steadily increasing and staying at those higher levels. They are going towards a model. The state has increased the Medicaid reimbursement rate
finally.
Significantly. It is 40% higher than it was.
Okay.
Medicaid cannot make you money, but it can offset our fixed costs. So they are going towards a model of more long-term than they were. So I believe beginning next week, they have moved all of their rehab residents to the second floor of the rehab facility.
The remodeling, right.
And they did some work on the first floor, and it will be opening up next week. They have 5 residents they will be moving into that, to the first floor, freeing up some long-term beds. Those will be long-term residents, and freeing up some long-term beds, and they have people coming in to fill those beds. So I don't know what the projected census is, but
it's trending in a better direction than it had been. And Willowbrook's almost at capacity now, isn't it, anyway?
It is.
At 125, they're not quite at capacity, but they had budgeted. I know.
Willowbrook.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
No, Willowbrook. Yes. Willowbrook's at 24 beds, and they're like at 22 point whatever, 23.
Yes, yes.
So they're full up.
Okay. Correct.
Thank you for allowing the digression. I yield the floor.
Just remind us, what is the capacity in the nursing home?
The total capacity is 154 beds, I believe. In their 23 budget, they had 134. I could be off on that.
If you want to go ahead.
So the remainder of the packet is largely details, additional information, footnotes. The footnotes, if you see, there's not actually a page number. They begin on page 38. All standard required footnote disclosures, very similar to prior year disclosures, with the exception of new disclosures added for the leasing standards, which you'll have on pages 48, 63, and 73. Ultimately, the leasing standard didn't have a hugely material impact on the county, so or on the financial statements at least. It had a significant impact on us preparing the financial statements, but
yes. A lot of work, but yeah.
The actual dollars, it it didn't have a huge impact. So I won't go into details on those footnotes unless there are any questions. Maureen pointed out the page number for the transfers, so there's information in the notes about all the transfers, about debt service schedules, pretty much any line ever in the financial statements. If you want more information there, it's in there. So unless there's a specific request to look at those, we'll move on to the supplementary and the other report.
On the new standard, that's when we're a lessee, not a lessor, right?
It actually affected both.
Oh, what lessor deals did we have to look at when we, give me an example of one or two. Did it affect like the beer garden? And
yes, those sorts of.
So those things were, we had to look at all
leases.
Of that. But it didn't affect the financials much.
Not too much, but it did turn, so now all lessor leases are handled the same and all of them go on the balance sheet now instead of just the capital leases before.
The space on our radio towers is another.
Yes, the towers is. Yeah, that's impacting a lot of municipalities too.
The one at Bristol Woods? Would have been. We would have had to do some work on that one. Right?
Yeah, I think that one, they're just, it's a percentage of revenue, so that one really wasn't covered.
Oh, okay. Good.
The public safety building.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a,
we almost missed
that might
one.
Be the big, that might be the biggest one.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, I don't want to miss. Okay, very good. I yield. Thank you.
All right. Anything else?
We were going to go to the supplementary information, which is on up to page 103. These are just basically some information that we gather from WRS and the actuaries that shows the pension and OPEB funding. That's all of the supplementary notes in here. And then we come to the non-major funds. They're in the beginning, they're all rolled up. All the non-majors are rolled up into one column. And then back here, starting on page 109, it breaks out. So every fund, if you want more information, it breaks out in detail. There really weren't any changes from April. The only change really was, again, ARPA, we took it out of non-major, moved it to major. So otherwise, they're all the same as they were back in April when we presented this to you. If you go to page 120 and 121, this just tells that CLA looked at our internal controls and our compliance, and they had no findings, which is normal for us. We do a lot of work throughout the year to make sure our internal controls are strong and work closely with CLA, so they're aware of our diligence. And that completes the report.
What about the management report? The end, you want to stand?
Oh, okay. Yep, I touched on that at the beginning, but yes, okay. That's sort of their high level report to those charged with governance, and all the language in here is very standard sort of boilerplate language. The second page of that report is where they kind of hit the nail on the head and say there were no difficulties in performing the audit, they don't have any findings to report. No corrected or uncorrected misstatements in the financial statements.
So no recommendations at all in the management letter, nothing?
Nothing that I was made aware of.
Yes.
Are you guys finished? I would like to draw your attention to page 1. Second to the last column, you'll see the federal inmate fund.
Oh, yeah.
What was eye-opening to me this year was this is the first year where we lost money in the federal inmate fund.
First year
This used to contain both the ICE inmates and the federal marshals. Obviously, all the ICE inmates were pulled out in 2020. What is left here is the federal marshals, but we are not allowed, we're making the same money off the federal marshals that we were back when the program first started. And our expenses are going up. So usually there used to be large profit here.
Millions.
Yeah. When the ICE inmates were here. And then it began to whittle down, and it was down to maybe a couple hundred thousand of profit last year. And this year was the first year that it was a loss.
And the loss is how much?
$120,000.
Okay. So why are we going to continue that?
I was just going to ask the same question.
Yeah, there.
Conversation.
I think that ought to be eliminated. If the federal government is going to pay their way, we certainly shouldn't subsidize them.
They are looking into that at this time.
And
you probably will have more conversation about this.
I think we ought to put that on the agenda for the next meeting, and I don't think we should continue to subsidize
unless the federal government raises their rates.
Exactly. We've talked about that time and time again.
Right.
That's a debt issue. They are not raising.
So she'll up you on the agenda for next meeting and ask for a representative of the Sheriff's Department to come and to speak on that topic.
I mean, I think we ought to be prepared to make a recommendation on that. I don't see why we should continue to bleed.
Right.
Asking them again, they've said no time and again. That isn't going to happen. I mean, I think it's time to cut it. That's my opinion.
No, you make a good point. And also, we have always staffing issues as they relate to just our own internal Kenosha County ability to monitor and supervise. Why should we have this additional this burden?
Yeah, I would ask that we place it on the agenda so we can, if we want to, pass a resolution on that. Is there any objection to that?
No.
Is there anything else you want to report to us?
No, we've said enough.
You want to get out of here.
We adopt the motion to receive the audit and file it. I would make that motion.
Second.
All right, any discussion?
Just a comment. We are charged here in this committee with trying to do our level best to look into the past, the present, and the future for budget considerations. So a tool like this, you know, we look at it December 31st, 2022, it's a closeout. This is the type of information we need going into the next budgetary process to be able to make informed decisions. So it's my understanding the way this works is you submit to CLA, Clifton Larson Associates, all the data, they review it, and they basically organize it and give us this compendium as an outside entity. Is that how that works?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. You have comments?
Well, I mean, they're performing an audit, so they're digging in and testing our transactions, testing our assumptions, and performing a whole host of procedures aside from just putting it together.
So they stamp their seal of approval on here that they vetted it as an outside agency.
Yes,
that's
correct.
So I think it's well reasoned. I'm glad we're doing it. I'm glad we're getting it as early as we can. And thank you to everyone here in the committee for agreeing with us and getting it out at an earliest possible stage. So thank you.
And I would point out, too, that the county puts together this information. A great majority of that, and not every county does that. Some counties let the auditors do that. We do that.
Right. Anyone else, Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This online, right? This will be put online.
It will be put online. After tonight's meeting, it will be emailed to the entire board with the opportunity, if they want a hard copy, they can have a hard copy. We have hard copies for them if they want it. And then it will be posted online.
And if Supervisor Grady is the one that had the idea of getting this out before budget, that I think that's good. That's really good to have this and see all of this before budget, because we just saw a bunch of stuff that affects the budget. So, and the third thing and final thing I'll say before I yield is, I know this takes thousands of hours. This is a clean audit. And in more respects than just the typical clean opinion. I mean, there's no management recommendations. In other words, you had no material journal entries that affected the, so it's really a job well done. And so thank you to the whole team that did this. And that's with that I yield.
Anyone else? All right, I guess that should do it. Thank you.
There's a motion.
Do we see any comments or any discussion on that? Mm-hmm. All right, there is. No. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We're moving on then to the audit of bills that we can circle completely. And are the reports human resources?
Human resources have no reports. Barna has a general fund report, and then I have a report after this.
All right.
All right. General fund report. Everyone should have one at their place. And it'll be up here on the screen momentarily. If you look at the bottom box on the page here, it shows that just a little softening from our last projection in August, about 65,000. But we're still in the good range of 31% of our general fund expenses. So looking up at the top section, which are items that are causing increase of the general fund, we're seeing continuing gains in our treasurer revenue surplus as those investments expire and we renew them at 5.5% and 6% rates. We're going to continue on having those numbers get bigger and bigger. We had a little improvement on human services surplus and workers' compensation insurance surplus, and a little improvement on the reserve for tax delinquencies of $45,000. On the negative side, the items that cause a decrease of the general fund, we saw some continuing increases to the deficits in Sheriff's Department. On the expense side,
Where are those?
I'm going to say right
okay.
now.
Okay, good.
Jail overtime is still up there. Inmate medical services is projected to be $200,000 to be over budget at year end. Pharmaceuticals is projected to be $300,000+ over projected or budget, I should say. And then groceries, supplies, and housekeeping, those kind of variable costs, those from cost increases, those are projected to be $200,000 to $300,000 more than budget as well. So that's what's driving on the expense side. On the revenue side, we have the inmate, federal inmate revenue that's not achieving the level of what we had budgeted, and also on the reimbursement side for the Huber and the parole holds. But those will be addressed as part of the 2024 budget when we reduce those revenues to a more realistic dollar amount. Vacancy deficit is very difficult at this point. It's very early, but we're seeing something. We're seeing more movement to the regular 200-250 deficit in that. Health insurance is still continuing to be in a good place, where we just have a small deficit projected at this point. I'm really pleased with that. That continuing liability insurance deficit is down to 50,000, but overall, just slight change from last month, but we're in a good place. As the months continue toward the end here, and our accruals and everything start coming in, we'll see where we are for year end. With that, I conclude my report.
Discussion?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question on the sheriff. Mm-hmm. I just remember at NACO seeing quite a bit of stuff about inmate medical, and some counties were finding ways to get that under control. And I can't remember if there was a discussion on this, or is this something we're looking at reviewing the contract and finding a way to bring that in, at least flatten the curve a bit, or is that...
Well, there is the contract that we have for the nursing, that will be part of the 2024 budget, and that that was reviewed, and there will be an increase in the 2024 budget.
Right.
These are the type of medical services that I spoke to had to do when they leave the facility and they're incurring medical costs outside of that contract.
So the medical costs are not within the contract, and that's what's driving the increase.
Right.
That's what I remember him talking about in NACO, that
right.
Those ways of reading that in. But I, so, that I yield.
Yeah. On the increases to the general fund, can you describe what Public Works operating surplus consists of?
I have the detail breakdown. I don't have it with me, but if my recollection is correct, highway was about break even, and parks and facilities were in the 100-150,000 to the good, and I think P&D and the other departments were made up the other 100,000 or
so. So when we take a look at this line, is this just, I guess, unanticipated gains, or is it not spending of budgeted capital?
It wouldn't be capital. It would be either projected lower expenditures than budgeted or more revenues than budgeted.
Okay.
It would be a combination of that. The capital would not affect the
okay.
figure.
And if I had specific questions, I could take that up with Public Works?
Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
Who is the financial person now?
Chris Walton.
Chris was doing it. Okay.
Yeah.
I will. Thank you. I appreciate that. I yield.
Anything else? That concludes your report.
It does.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Patty?
All right. So at the CIP meeting, Supervisor Rose asked for information about the interest on our debt service. What I had in my notes was the request of how much interest is as a percentage of tax levy. I followed up with Chairman Rose on Monday to make sure that I had captured his thoughts properly, and he said, let's look at total debt service, net principal, and net interest as a percentage of the tax levy. So that's what this chart shows, and it goes back 10 years to 2013. So I'll point out that net levy for debt service is what we levy for debt service. So our debt service payment might be higher, but a component comes from the reimbursement from the city. For that wasn't in 2013, but there is a component now for money we borrowed for the city that they reimburse us every year. So that comes off because we don't levy for that. Also, Brookside comes off, so the total debt service might be higher than this, but this is what we are levying for debt service. And it's broken down. I did an actual calculation to make sure I hit the principal and the interest proper with the reimbursements that we get. Another component that decreases our interest are premiums that we get on the debts, on the sales when we issue the notes and bonds. So that decreases the interest component. So you can see that back in 2013, if you look over to the right, debt service as a percentage of tax levy was at about 24.5%. The principal was about 20%, and interest was 4.35. So a little over 4 cents was interest on each dollar levy. As you look down those percentages over the years, getting to 2023, you can see debt service is a little bit more than 25%. Principal is 22.4%, bless you. And interest is 2.97, so a little less than 3 cents for every dollar levied. Our debt has increased. That's not on this chart. This was the request, so this is what I broke out. But because we have been securing such low interest rates, the interest component for each levy dollar is not as high as the principal, because we're paying off more principal than interest because the interest is lower. You can see looking at 2023, the net interest is in the actual dollars column is 2.193. In 2013, it was 2.521.
What happened in 18? 800?
We received a significant premium that year, so that decreased the interest significantly.
What do you mean significant premium?
When we sold.
You mean the interest was very
yes.
low? Oh, okay.
So are we to expect, like this next year, that our interest rates probably, because the interest rates are up, our interest will not be as low as 2.97?
It will be in that same neighborhood.
Okay.
It goes up little by little because the interest is spread out over 10 years with the issue we did this year. We didn't do it
okay.
this year.
Let's say interest rates stay high for 10 years.
Right.
Then at the end of that 10 years, then we would see
probably.
a big jump because it would be 10 years of high interest.
And higher interest, yes, but keep
okay.
in mind it says percentage of our total tax levy,
right.
and our tax levy tends to go up year over
right.
year as well. So,
and it depends on how much you borrow. If you borrow less,
right.
even if the interest rate's
less.
Higher, then
right.
right. So does anyone have any questions on this?
Yeah. Comment. For discussion is, I mean, the way we, at least I always looked at this, and a lot of the administration looked at it, is when we secure dollars in the form of principal to pay for capital, and then we pay interest on that. The interest is not that out of line with inflation. Now, I know in 2013, 4.35 is quite a bit higher than inflation, but when you look over a period of time, it aligns with inflation. Now, if you look at 2022 at 3.32, when inflation was significantly higher than that, in 2021, 2.87 inflation. So you can balance the 4% of 2013 out with maybe an 8% inflation from 2021. And I remember doing analyses showing that in some years we were actually, when you adjust for inflation, getting free money and actually giving money back to the taxpayers adjusted. And that's really, from a realistic standpoint, the way you have to look at it. I know people, they like to look just at the hard dollars, but if you're living in the world of reality, that's the way you have to look at it. And I think that's the way you can interpret this interest rate column. You can look at it that way.
So the other day, the consumer price index came was 4.1% increase. So that's what you're saying, as long as this percentage here is less than the rate of inflation of 4.1% the other day.
I think you can look at that and do an analysis and say you're getting free money. The analysis can be more sophisticated than just what we're talking about, but still, when you adjust for inflation, you're not grabbing money from the taxpayers that they have now and then burdening them with it to do big projects. You're spreading it out over a period of time and then adjusting for inflation. We're getting better rates than anyone in the private sector could get, It works well when you look at the dollar flow and the burden on our community. It works well.
Further discussion? Do you want to give this to the board as well?
Okay. Yes, that was my question.
Okay.
Is the format sufficient to send to the board?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Unless somebody wants to add something.
I think it's a good report to have the board. And there was it's a question answered from the meeting.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I would put an explanation
yes.
in there about what you explained to us about
okay.
the net levy for debt service
okay.
problem.
All right. Are there any other reports that from as listed?
No.
All right. That concludes our agenda. Is there anything else?
I would move to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.